This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. On this episode, Clark hitting the mark for Dundee United as 20% wage cuts hang over the squad, Dundee hoping to take the sting out of the Wasps' tail, and Scotland, we live in hope rather than expectation. Hello, I'm Callum Woodger and welcome to another edition of Twa Teams One Street. It's episode 90 and I am joined by George Cran.
Hello.
And Sean Hamilton is gracing us with his Perthy presence as well.
You're welcome, mate. Perthy is nice, I like it.
I've coined it.
Better than what I normally get called, but yeah, I know there's a certain je ne sais quoi about that, I quite like it.
Yeah. I don't know what makes you particularly Perthy, but...
It's just a very Perth quality about it.
It's the flat cap and the barber jacket, mate.
It's your barber jacket, you said?
Barber jacket and the flat cap, mate. That's what it is, yeah.
Yep. That is true. No, yeah, you're a debonair chap.
And the predilection for farmyard animals.
I think we should move on, Callum.
Moving swiftly on, aye.
You started it.
Yeah, I did, to be fair. Made my own bed there. Following on from the magnificent appearance of young Chrissy Dodds a couple of weeks ago, to preview Dundee's clash with Morton, we've got another local reporter from the Championship in the form of Kieran Vance from the Alloa Advertiser here. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, aye. Thanks for having me.
Kieran's here to preview Dundee's clash with Alloa at the weekend. Well, Friday night, actually, isn't it? It's Friday night games this week. But we'll kick off with Dundee United first. Obviously, the financial things going on there at the moment, but we'll start with the actual football, the games. 2-1 win at the weekend against Ross County. What do you make of that, George? Nicky Clark, your main man, your hero, getting a double. Doing good this season, isn't he?
Aye, well, I was just having a wee look just before we came on at the scoring charts in the Premiership. I've just realised that I didn't actually note down how many goals he's got, but I think he's got five. But he's actually got more than Ryan Kent, Odson Edward, Alfredo Morelos, Christian Deutsch, players like that. I mean, he's made a cracking start to life in the top flying. Considering he'd waited so long to get his chance in the top division, applied his trade in the lower divisions and scored a whole bunch of goals, he's doing just fine. And obviously, he thought he'd had another goal nicked off him.
Yeah.
The second one, I think apparently Ronnie on the tannoy gave it to Mark Reynolds. So here, kind of the exact same thing that happened at the game I did just a few weeks ago against Kelly Hearts, and he's not got that goal yet. So he's actually, I think he's on 8 in all competitions, which is it's a tidy wee return by this point of the season.
Yeah,
but in terms of the result, considering all that's gone on in the background, I mean, it's perfect for the squad to respond on the pitch. I mean, there's all sorts going on off it that'll be concerning for them, but it's good to see they can keep their heads right when the ball comes out.
There seems to be a bit of a kind of surprise of, oh, Nicky Clark, he's on fire. He started the season so well. But this guy's a goal scorer. I mean, he's scored goals at every club he's been at. And I don't know, maybe it's because it's the step up to the Premiership is why people are a bit shocked. But he's kind of carrying that front line at the moment because Lawrence Shankland isn't maybe firing the way we thought he would. Mark McNulty's not really got up to full fitness yet. I mean, has it surprised you, George, that Clark stepped up the way that he has, or
there was a question mark. There always is. Whether it's surprised that, not sure, because I always knew he was a good player. I felt he maybe didn't get quite the crack of the whip that he maybe should have got when he was at Rangers. Although maybe he didn't take the chances when he got them. Now he's obviously an older, more experienced player. Maybe he's taken those lessons on and. He's stepped up to the plate when Shanglin's not. I think that injury's kind of taken the wind out of his sails a wee bit at the start of the season. Hopefully, he kind of finds his way again. But yeah, they needed somebody to step up, and obviously, Clark's been the man so far.
He's been getting a bit of criticism, Shankland, almost a wee bit with some of his displays lately from the fans and the lack of goals. Do you think that's justified, Sean, or do you think, you know, it's just a kind of case of got to give him time because we know the quality he's got?
I think he was a lot better against Ross County than he has been. He was a lot livelier, particularly in the first half. He trying to get on the ball. He was dropping back a lot, which is actually what he's been criticised for in recent weeks. Because
it's necessity, though, isn't it, almost? Because
it is necessity. He
hasn't been getting the ball forward.
Yeah, this is, so the symptom of the fact that he has been dropping back to pick up possession is that he hasn't been in the box or hasn't been getting the ball in the box. And it's not as simple as that. There are other factors there as well. But at the weekend, I thought he looked lively and really, really determined to get involved and to get himself a goal. He had a few cracks at goal in the first half in particular. So he's conscious himself of the fact that he's not been in the right places, that he hasn't been getting the ball in the right places, and that he hasn't been having efforts at goal. So he certainly looked to address that. I think the fact that he hasn't been getting the ball in the right places is frustrating him, because I've watched United 2 weeks in a row now, and at St Johnstone last weekend, there was a wee moment in the second half where there was yet another ball played over the top for him to chase into the channels, and it's gone out of play for a throw-in. And it was right in front of where the press area is at McDermott Park. Yeah. And as he's running off the pitch, you were there yourself, you saw it too. So he was shouting. He shouted, you know, it's so frustrating, you know. So that's something that's been bugging him. And Nicky Clark has picked up the slack. He's kind of had to. And I think we're talking about whether that's a surprise or not. It's funny you mentioned Rangers. I kind of think like Nicky Clark, his reputation's kind of been like almost artificially boosted by the fact that he was at Rangers for a while. Do you know what I mean? Because it wasn't Rangers in the Premiership.
No,
we're not talking about like a Rangers player like you would expect a Rangers player to be. We're talking about an utterly diminished Rangers at that time. Who were not where they are now.
Was it League One or Championship? I can't even remember. Was it League One he played in with them, or was it?
I think it was both.
Was it both, maybe?
I think he actually got hurt by the time at Rangers in terms of his reputation. Because he struggled a wee bit for goals.
It was certainly down the leagues. Yeah. So it's not... Everywhere he goes now, he carries around this former Rangers player tag. And it's not the same thing. What he has been is a good lower league goal scorer over the years. So... Yeah, there was a question mark about him stepping up to the Premiership, and I think that was entirely justified. But fair play to him. What he has done in recent weeks, in particular, is stand up to the test. I think he's done really, really well. Mm-hmm. And because Shankland, for whatever reason, hasn't, whether injury at the start of the season or whether the way the team's playing has contributed to it, which I think it has, he hasn't been doing what we thought he would in the Premiership, and Clark has picked up the slack, and he's done very, very well. He deserves all the credit in the world for it.
Yeah, the thing I'll give...
Clark was... Sorry, I've looked it up. Clark, League One, 9 goals and 23 for Rangers, and then Championship, 8 goals and 33, and 2 goals and 22 in his last season. So
that's not... It's not setting the heather alight, is it?
No, I think that's what kind of hurt his reputation a wee bit. He scored 24 and 107 in total at Rangers. I think it's not the numbers Rangers would be looking for a striker. And I think he kind of had to rebuild his kind of goal scoring reputation after that at Dunfermline and then at United. But he's shown that he's maybe learned from that, I think.
Yeah,
he's peak of his career as well. What is he, 29? So you'll be seeing the best out of him at this time, and it's good for United. It's good for United as well to have rectified the problems from the previous games of getting the ball in the box, getting touches, getting chances, having shots on goal even. Against Ross County, the rise to fifth, the forward players will be more encouraged going into the game on Friday night to take on the COVID 11 St Mirren, whoever's available to be fielded.
They got any goalkeepers this time?
I'm in goals. and I've... absolutely no bias to either team, so I'll be doing a grand job. But in all seriousness, it's a really good chance for United to go there, a team that's not played for 2-3 weeks, and pick up another 3 points and keep building, because that'll be 4 games unbeaten if they do that in the league.
Yeah,
and also looking at the league table, it puts them 12 points ahead of St Mirren. St Mirren obviously have games in hand, but I mean, at this stage of the season, that's very welcome when you're just coming up, first season back in the top flight. And the table looks pretty decent, although teams behind them have games in hand. But it's amazing what difference a win makes and how rosy everything looks in terms of your form and how your season's going.
A lot's been made of this step up in divisions for United, Sean. after that win against Ross County, I mean, has Mickey Mellon sort of answered these critics that they can do it, or what's your take on that, the whole, the levels of expectation?
Well, it's interesting because a couple of weeks ago, Mickey Mellon actually came out and said, people have to remember where this team's come from. You know, we've been in the Championship for X amount of years, and 16 or 18 of the 20 players I'm training with were in the Championship for the last however many years. And it was almost at odds with his message at the start of the season, which was, we're Dundee United and we should be beating X, Y and Z teams. And I don't know whether it was after they beat Motherwell away from home.
Is it not the case that kind of, sorry to interrupt you, but like both statements are kind of true? There is that expectation that they are Dundee United, they should be winning these games, but also that the fact of the matter is they are just being promoted.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think this is for Mickey Mellon, although he'll say that it's not a surprise to him, but certainly he'll be finding out that, yeah, they are Dundee United. And when you don't win games, criticism does follow. You get, because that's two sides of the same thing. You can say that we're Dundee United and we should be doing this and that and we're working towards it, and that's absolutely fine. But you're also Dundee United, so if you don't win games, you're going to get stick. That's just that's the nature of it. So Mickey Mellon, I've learned that over the last few weeks, for sure. And I think, to be honest, if you look at the Premiership, there's been a few performances that the fans haven't particularly enjoyed watching. Mickey Mellon would argue that's to be expected, but I think the really problematic bit was the Betfred Cup, because when you lose to a Peterhead at Tannadice, that I mean, especially off the back of some heavy defeats in the Premiership as well, that makes punters worry, and especially when the performance hasn't been great as well. So I think that was probably the main trigger point for a lot of the criticism that followed. But fair play to them. They've against Aberdeen and against St Johnstone, they shut the back door, and they weren't pretty to watch, but they were dogged and they were determined, and they got a point out of both of those games that, to be honest, if you look at the statistics, you wouldn't have expected them to get. So they've done well there, and they followed it up with a win over Ross County. So I mean, they're fifth, as you say, and 12 points clear of St Mirren. So in terms of expectations, we're at that old chestnut. Well, if you'd offered that to Dundee United at the start of the season, by November you'd be 12 points clear of the bottom and sitting in fifth, we'd have bit your hand off for it. So for all the sort of criticism that's happened over the last few weeks, yes, that is just a symptom of being Dundee United, because people have expectations. But in terms of what they've done with those expectations, I think they're probably where they should be, and I think they'll be happy enough with that, and that's fair enough. But if they lose a few more, there'll be more criticism. It's inevitable.
Yep. Other news, obviously, Yondo Fuchs makes his debut against Ross County, which is a boost for United and the supporters. I think he only played, 13 or so minutes, something like that. But good to see him on the field. And of course, this win over the Staggies was all set against the backdrop of the club asking football staff to take a 20% wage cut until the end of the season. Club chairman and owner Mark Ogden was speaking to us at DC Thompson and made a statement to fans calling for getting supporters back in the stadiums and asking for more government support, saying that the cost-cutting measures at the club could get messy. Negotiations are on the go with Mickey Mell and his coaching staff and the players. George, what have you made of the event since last Thursday? I mean, we've not had a chance to really discuss it, given the last podcast came out a day before all this news broke. But not nice to see, but I suppose it's just a sad reality of our times.
Yeah, it's disappointing, to say the least. Obviously, I'd hoped we'd kind of got through all this stuff across the road at Dundee over the summer. But obviously, always new money's going to be tight, but having no fans in the stand seems to have really caught United in terms of the money they've got to kind of keep going. And it's difficult. Obviously, these discussions are going to take a while. It took a while across the road. We're kind of in the middle of the season, which complicates matters, I would expect.
This have been done earlier at the start of the season, the way that kind of
the timing to me feels a bit strange, yeah. Because obviously Hibs and Aberdeen did a similar thing, but they did it ages ago.
Yeah.
It just feels kind of. I haven't quite got my head around it. I've not been speaking with folk at United to figure out what the issue has been, but and obviously the thing Dundee had in their, well, maybe not in their favour, but they had the option when they did it, when the football was stopped, you could use that nasty little clause 12 if players didn't kind of agree to take a cut, that you could, there was the threat of that cancelling the contract, which is a horrible thing to do, obviously, but it's a...
They had furlough as well, of course, there was a furlough scheme then.
Yeah, of course. The timing just feels a lot strange to me, that I'd like to hear more answers about why it's happened at this time, and they're kind of blaming having no fans in the stands, but I don't think anyone expected there to be stadiums full at this point. I think even if everything had gone swimmingly and we'd kind of dealt well with the pandemic, that would have some fans in the stands by now, but it would have been 30% or something like that.
I mean Dundee's a tier three area now as well under Scottish government.
Yeah, but even so, looking back a few weeks ago when we're thinking, right, we're looking okay. But I imagine all those would be season ticket holders anyway, so it wouldn't be paying to get in.
Exactly. I mean, have they not already paid their kind of dues? They're first in line to get in if you're going to let 500 fans in or 1,000 fans in. If United have got 5,000 season ticket holders, you're not really going to get much money on top of what is already in the coffers.
And you're not going to get a travelling support either. No, it's a no-go. So for me, that doesn't quite make sense, that explanation of things. There's things that don't add up there for me. And you could say that perhaps they were looking at opening hospitality on a limited basis, from which they would maybe make a little bit more money. But again, they'll have corporate partners who are hospitality bookings all season, and they'll have paid up front for that. So on a similar basis, I don't see how all of a sudden you're suddenly opening up sort of 30, 40 grand a week revenue streams through having people in buying pies and pints and what have you. Because again, the other side of that is, if you've got people in the ground, you need to pay to steward them, you need to pay to police the event. So costs are adding up as well. So for me, that just doesn't make sense.
So I mean, do you think, is COVID-19 enough of an excuse for this, or do you think it's maybe more to do with other spending at the club in the last 18 months, 2 years? Because as we all know, they recorded near £3-4 million loss last financial year.
Yeah, the losses are documented. The wage to turnover ratio is documented. It's way above where you would want it to be. COVID is still a huge factor in this. I don't think we can diminish that at all. It's massive. Because who knows, if Dundee United were operating even on the basis that they have been, and the world right now was not the way it is, and fans were still getting in, and there were no restrictions of any kind, then perhaps the cash flow situation, well, it would look a lot better. And perhaps Mark Ogren, well, he wouldn't have to plug such big gaps. So if he's happy to run the business that way under those circumstances, that's entirely up to him. And also, you'd be looking at probably, perhaps at having attracted bids for Shanklin in the summer, or perhaps not, and pushing them to January. Perhaps the bids that would be coming in for players would be higher than they would. So it changes the entire complexion of the situation. So COVID, for me, is still the dominant factor. Obviously, United have spent a lot of money since Mark Ogren come in, so that's a factor as well, for sure. But COVID has been enormous in this, and I don't think we can diminish that.
Yeah, I do think the spending of the money was always the plan, I think, though, to first get them out of the Championship and then to establish them in the Premiership. Obviously, there's no way to foresee the pandemic coming. I mean, it's totally thrown the world upside down. So it's difficult to kind of castigate them for spending that money, because I think Mark Ogren was coming in knowing that it was going to cost a lot of money to get United back to where they feel they should be.
United fans have to be worried that the money's going to dry up, or he'll pull the plug, or anything like that. Is that something on the horizon that could be concerning them?
I think that's on the horizon for every club in the entire world, to be honest. I mean, it's different because I don't know if they still use the term sugar daddy or whatever, but it's a wee bit like that. Conscious of all sorts.
What, you and your missus doing the bedroom, George? Keep that private. Don't bring it to the podcast.
But I think the financial world in which we're in, nothing to do with my bedroom, but I think every club has
that. No money changes hands in your bedroom, George.
Not in the bedroom, no.
This is veered rather severely, hasn't it?
But on a serious note, yeah, I think every club has worries that if they're funded by successful businessmen, which a lot of clubs are, that financial stream is going to get curtailed by quite a lot by the COVID. So yeah, I can't even remember. What was the question? I forgot. You've distracted myself with the sugar daddy comment, I think.
I'm just placing myself in your bedroom at the moment, to be honest. Not for the first time.
I wondered what that noise was.
Back on track. Sean, do you see an agreeable way out of this in the coming weeks and months that players, staff will agree to the cuts or will fans have to weigh in, or will it be a kind of balance of both?
I don't know. I think probably most of the players will go along with the wage cut situation, I think. I do think there's a question about the timing on the pitch as well as off the pitch, because you look at other clubs that have done this, have gone down this path. Most of them did it before the season started. At that time there was access to furlough and whatever other protections that were available. But also, we're at a point now where we're over a third of the way through the season now, and the situation at that point is obviously it's active. So you're where you are in the league. You're concerned about what points you're picking up. Every game is big, and all of a sudden you've got this to deal with as well. So you've got to go out and empty the tank on a Saturday. But what's hanging over your head is the prospect of earning 20% less than you would have ordinarily done for doing it. So I'm not sure that now is the best time for players to have to deal with that question. I think it probably would have been strategically, in a football sense, more sensible to do it at the start of the season. But then at the same time, maybe there were other considerations for not doing it at that time, possibly to do with not alerting other clubs to the fact that we need money here, and therefore sort of doing yourself in out of potential fees for players that you might want to sell. So, but again, doing it now, you've actually caused a potential problem on the field. And fair play to United's players for just getting on with it on Saturday, by the way. Their attitude was spot on.
So you've caused
yourself that problem. But also, you're looking to plug financial gaps, and people know you need to make cuts now. And therefore, people may assume that you need to sell people in January. And given that they know the scenario, you know, are they going to come in with 2 million when they might think, well, let's just try one, or let's try 750,000, to see how desperate things are? So that's something that we'll learn in the next few months, and how it goes from now until then, I've no idea, mate.
But on the point of the players as well, really professional job on Saturday and the whole season. You know, the conduct's been excellent, and you know, largely, and the play's been good as well on the pitch. And got to be wary of, we don't want to see players getting thrown under the bus if they reject the 20% cut, because 20% cut in your wages is significant for anyone, no matter how much you earn. And these guys not all of them are going to be comfortable or highly paid superstars. You know, a lot of them are young guys, young Scottish footballers who are just making their way in the world, you know, getting mortgages, having kids, whatever it is. All these things to weigh up, just like anyone else. So I mean, that's just me throwing in my 2 pence worth, but I think, you know, there's got to be a
sugar daddy,
common sense approach here as well.
Showing off where you're throwing your 2 pence in there. That's a big spender.
Right, okay, moving on. Dundee got a bit more than 2 pence this week on the other side of the street. obviously I'm talking about Dundee getting a small payment of coronavirus insurance money. I guess we'll just start there. George, welcome news for the club that's after all this time, you know, maybe like 6 months of talking about it, it's finally paying out for them a wee bit.
Yeah, well, I think it's even longer than 6 months. Well, when did lockdown come in? At the start of March or something, so that's what, March, 8 months?
Yeah, I suppose it is.
And then you start talking about insurances and stuff after that.
You said this in the previous section, nobody saw this coming. How could you see it coming? John Nelms saw it coming. He had the insurance sitting there waiting. You've got to take your hat off to him for that, don't you?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure he particularly predicted a global pandemic coming
no,
in.
No, I don't mean that, obviously. I mean,
but there was
Nelmstradamus.
Yeah. I think how it happened was, I'm trying to think, I think there was a problem in the Bill Shankly stand, I think. Maybe I'm mixing up two stories, but I think, and they had to bring in a new insurance policy after doing some work in the stands, and it just so happened that the better deal had this added kind of pandemic thing in it.
Pandemic insurance, brilliant.
Yeah, so I don't think it particularly cost them anything. They got a wee bit extra, which is obviously, well, so far it hasn't helped them, but suddenly it might become a lot better. As we can move on over the next few months.
I think, John, if I remember rightly, was John Nelms not trying to claim some credit for this back at the time? Was he not saying we've been smart or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well, you can see it both ways. I can't take it away from him because he took out the policy. So,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Sean. You know, the timing of when he said it, like when he was kind of like public enemy number one in Scottish football, like, probably wasn't the best thing to come out and say, we've been smart. We're the good guys here.
Well, they were, one of, what was it, five clubs that had that insurance, which shows that I don't know exactly how it happened, but I know what you mean. Nobody saw the COVID coming. It seemed like at the time, obviously months ago, that Dundee had protected themselves against this possibility, and and were in a good, strong position. But obviously, the insurance company tried their best, I think, to minimise their outgoings and stuff in an obviously a difficult time. But it's eventually, hopefully, the money starts coming in and they can kind of move on. And it feels like Dundee have moved on, obviously. Their players are playing with it with a wage cut. We've just been talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening across the road. They've obviously been playing. They're playing with a 20% cut at the moment, if I remember correctly. It's too many numbers. 2 pence, 20%. I can't think.
But, right, we'll move on. We move away from the finances, George.
Yeah, hi. My brain's gone to mush. Yeah.
Nothing new there. On the pitch,
pretty much.
Dens on Saturday, 1-1 draw with Raith Rovers. Dundee take the lead. Charlie Adam just before half time, but it's a late equaliser from Frankie Musonda for Raith. Sort of a case of same old story for Dundee. You look at their form at the start of the season: loss, win, draw. Sort of losing late goals, sloppy defending. It's a habit that they can't afford to continue for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that they deserved to win on Saturday. They played well enough. They were better than Raith and should have had it. They should have been further ahead. Had a couple of chances. They hit the bar. Well, actually, Raith hit their own bar, which was quite an amazing clearance. And they should have been done by then. Charlie Adam had a wee tweak in his hamstring and had to go off and that lost him a bit. He obviously scored a great goal in the first half, and the goal was just—it was a horrible goal to concede. It was really poor. I think there was maybe a couple of guys at the front post that could have dealt better with it. The goalkeeper could have dealt better with it, and the guy Mark and Frankie Musonda could have done better. It was a whole team effort working together to really mess it up. But if it felt as totally robbed, that's not my own. I've robbed it off a film. Don't worry. But it felt the same as the Morton game the week before, that they'd got their goal and it looked like they were going to hold out at the end. But a bit of slackness cost them, and Raith got a goal. And I think it just builds up. Like, Friday night's going to be massive now. They need to respond. So really interesting to see how they do that.
Probably a good time to bring Kieran into the conversation here. But George, I want to know first, what quote are you talking about, and what film?
Oh, it's not a very well-known film. It's called Basketball. It's the guys that made South Park.
I know that film.
What was it? It's a team game, and it took all of us working together to really mess this one up. Although there's a swear word in there that I didn't use.
All right, fair play. Anyway, Kieran, from the Alloy Advertiser, has kindly joined us today. Big game on Friday night. How have the Wasps been doing this season? We know, obviously, part-time team. A case of just trying to maybe avoid relegation and consolidate in the Championship for them again?
Maybe. I think they started the season quite well in terms of playing in the Betfred Cup. Got 2 wins out of 3 games. And then the 2 performances in the league so far, I wasn't at the Morton game, but I was at the Dunfermline game last week, and the scoreline 4-1 looks like it was a bit of a doing, but the 3 goals for Dunfermline came after 67, 68 minutes, and I think up until then, either team could have went on and won it. It was just a bit of a poor mistake on Alloa's part that gave Dunfermline the lead again, and then they managed to just go on from there. But I don't think there's anything to be worried about for Alloa so far. They may be in a relegation battle again. I think they need to get some points on the board as soon as possible, and I suppose Friday night's as good a time to do it.
You mentioned before we came on that a few kind of key men have left the club, and Kevin O'Hara, Ian Flanagan. Has there been anybody brought in to sort of replace those guys? Or?
Well, I think with Kevin O'Hara's goals last season, that's going to be a huge loss. And Alloa have had a few shots on target this year, and a lot of shots on goal, but the goals haven't been coming. So I think they definitely need to try and find, either within the squad, that ruthlessness again that they've lost with Kevin O'Hara. In terms of Ian Flanagan retiring, I think they've made 2 good signings in Ray Grant and Innes Murray. From what I've seen them playing in the middle of the park, they're really comfortable on the ball. They like to get it and pass it about, don't panic. So I think the 2 signings are going to impress. And Stefan Skugel as well is a signing that caught a lot of people's attention. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be a little bit like Kevin O'Hara in the sense that he'll want to try and use Alloa as a platform to get back to full-time football. So I think he'll really have something to prove, and he'll be looking to get some good performances done soon. He's not played as much as he'd like to so far, but I think once he gets going, he'll be a really good signing for Alloa, and he'll make a big difference to them.
Yeah, they've still got that narrow pitch.
Aye. It's got to be, I think on Friday night when Dundee come, I think it won't be easy for Dundee. I don't know who's going to be the favourites. I know that Alloa have lost their 2 first games, but it certainly won't be easy for Dundee to come and take 3 points. And the way Peter Grant sets his teams up and the way that he wants to play, he'll be looking to take 3 points himself. So it won't be easy for Dundee to come on Friday night.
Yeah, how's he been setting them up? Has he been doing the playing out from the back? He used quite well last season. Has it been quite attractive kind of football?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I speak to people, I think there's a kind of negative perception about Alloa, but when you actually go and see them, the way they pass the ball about is great, and the centre-backs, the full-backs, they don't panic. And like I say, the 2 central midfield players, they're always available. They always make space. And once they can kind of beat the press from another team just by passing it simply about the back and then going straight through the middle, there's never any panic. It's never any long balls up, just unless it's an absolute necessity. So I think they play good football, and once they kind of find that killer instinct in the top third of the park, then I think they'll be okay. They've got a good looking team so far.
Yeah, that's kind of Peter Grant's philosophy almost, and you've got to take your hat off to him a wee bit as well for that. I mean, it'd be easy for a team who are fancied to be at the bottom kind of end of the table to sit in and try and earn a point or you know, defend against Dundee, but we saw it last season. George, particularly United, would go there and really struggle against Alloa.
Yeah, United, no, they didn't like going down to the Recreation Park. Dundee actually had a good record last season.
3-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, they won 3-0 down there. They won 2-1 at Dens, although Alloa played really well that day and got a lot of kind of plaudits for the way they went about it. And then it was 0-0 late in the season, although Dundee got applauded off by the home fans despite drawing 0-0, because they'd played so well it could have been a 4 or 5-0 kind of job. So, I mean, that's in Dundee's favour, I think. They had a good record against Alloa, and we've seen over the past few years how kind of dangerous a team they can be, particularly at home. I think Been an interesting one for the TV. I think Dundee need to kind of, obviously the last game on TV was a bit of a shocker at Hearts, and then they need to kind of show the neutral kind of public what Dundee are about, rather than getting thumped by the Jambos.
Bit of an understatement there, Georgia. Just a bit of a shocker.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what people remember. Dundee probably shouldn't really care what people think about them, but they want to be known as a team that can play, and obviously they've got great players in there, Charlie Adam and Graham Dorans. If they can continue the kind of form they've started to show since that Hearts game, then they should be in good shape anyway to get back to winning ways.
Looks like it's going to be a competitive league again, Sean. I mean, you can see Dunfermline look good. Rafe came to Dens on Saturday and got a point. Hearts obviously are right up there. Dundee have got to find some kind of consistent form, start stringing wins together if they want to be contending for the title, and obviously as high a position as they can for potentially going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a league full of gritty, unpleasant teams, isn't it?
Dundee leading the pack, or
as it usually is.
That could be the strap line for the
marketing.
The whole league, yeah, the marketing pitch.
The grittiest, most unpleasant league in the world. Welcome to the Scottish Championship. Yeah, why not? If your unique selling point is crapness, you might as well just make that the cornerstone of your marketing strategy.
It's a tour de force of pish.
Exactly.
Get the bleeper.
Exactly. Totally. But aye, no, they do need to string some wins together, as you said, because if you've got designs on winning any league, then you want to be winning your home game, certainly. So to not win one in the fashion that they failed to do the weekend, that's very frustrating for them. And that's not something you can afford too many of. If you've got designs on winning a league. Be interesting. If you were to ask James McMake whether he wanted to win it, obviously he'd say he wanted to. Whether they can or not, whether it's realistic at this point, I mean, I tend to favour Hearts quite heavily after the evidence of the first game of the season. But you know, we never know. But if Dundee have a hope, then they have to start winning these games. So like Raith Rovers, and that's not to diminish Raith Rovers, but if you want to win the league, you've got to beat Raith Rovers at home. And similarly, pretty much everybody else at home. You only get one or two of these aberrations a season, and they've had a tanking off Hearts, and they've dropped 2 points at home at Raith Rovers already. So need to sort it out.
Yeah. Other news coming out of Dens this week. Positive COVID-19 test in the squad. Obviously, we want to wish that player well. You know, speedy recovery, hopefully. George, you've been speaking to the Dundee camp this week after that result, and after obviously the news about the coronavirus test, how's the mood in the camp going into this game?
Well, in terms of purely football, in the sense that everyone's still, despite the result of the weekend, fairly upbeat. But in terms of the coronavirus, obviously there's a concern there for the player involved. We don't know who the player is. Obviously it's a medical issue, so it's a confidential kind of thing. But I think the concern is not for what's going to happen on the pitch, but it's for the health of the player. And they all wish him the best, and obviously we do as well. The club have been kind of, I think they've kind of approached it in the absolutely the correct manner, and kind of they've obviously informed the governing bodies, and they're taking every measure they can to make sure it's only one case. It's obviously unfortunate, but I think the way the kind of virus is going, I think pretty much every club's going to have to deal with this probably directly at some point, I think, which is obviously worrying, but it's something everyone's going to have to have to sort out, I think.
Yeah, bit of a wild one here for you as well, George. Do you remember the name Cedwin Scott, or is it Chedwin Scott? I don't know. I don't remember the name clearly.
I remember him. He's I can't remember how you pronounce it either, because I'm sure I asked that question a few times, and it's weird.
Let's just say Sedwin. Make a decision. That's what
I think it's Sedwin. Sedwin. Yeah, we'll go Sedwin.
It's better than Chedwin, isn't it? Sedwin.
He did score quite a few goals in the under 20. I wonder whether it was under 20s at that point, but in the reserves basically. And he'd done well in the reserves. He's kind of big lad, strong, and gets about the pitch well. He never quite looked like he was ready for first team football up at Dundee, although he wasn't far off it. So it is a surprise, I have to admit.
Yeah, trial at Newcastle, should mention that. Where's that
is it
from?
For Newcastle or their under-23s, you think?
It's bound to be for their under-23s, isn't it? But even still, I mean, the guy was playing non-league football. He scored something like 20 goals in 9 games. I mean, that's not a bad return, is it?
No.
That's unbelievable.
I remember his name because his dad emailed me once to say that I got a stat wrong in one of my stories about him.
Like usual.
I think I maybe chopped a goal off him by accident or something. So that's the only dealings I think I had with him. But he was well thought of at Dundee, but I'm not sure whether he was going to make it as a first team player.
There you go. Well, he's kicking on.
But best of luck to him, though.
Yeah. He's kicking on. So are we. Moving on to the next section of the show, we're going to look ahead to Scotland's crucial Euro 2020 playoff clash next week. Scotland travel to Serbia next Thursday for a place at Euro 2020 next year in 2021. Squad's been announced. Lawrence Shankland is involved. What do you make of what we've got at our disposal? Lads, looking at it on paper, looks decent to me.
Looks fine, eh? Although I mean, I don't want to preempt you. I'm sure you're coming to it, but I'm surprised Shankland's in there. Have to say.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, we've spoken already about lack of goals, struggling for form a wee bit, and obviously you look at guys like, just plucking one name, Kevin Nisbet, absolutely firing it at the moment. You thought maybe he'd be worth a pop, but I don't know. My thought behind it was, he's been in a lot of squads recently, and Steve Clarke's been trying to force all this kind of club mentality with Scotland. So he's picking a lot of the same boys that have been in and around squads in the last couple of years. Lyndon Dykes is going to lead the line, isn't he? I mean, that's most likely. But Lee Griffiths back in the squad as well, George. That's good to see.
Yeah, obviously he's our best striker, I think. Obviously, Lyndon Dykes has different, very useful attributes. He's about twice the size of Lee Griffiths, I think. But yeah, I think Griffiths, in terms of sheer quality and what he can do with the ball, I think. And he looks sharp. He made quite an impression. He came off the bench for Celtic up at Aberdeen last weekend and scored a cracking goal. So yeah, I'm delighted to see him back. Craig Gordon as well. I think he's been really good for Hearts so far this season. In terms of Shankland, I think it maybe just shows that he's impressed Steve Clarke in the camps they've had so far. He might not have had so much time on the pitch, but it's obviously made enough of an impression that he's still in that squad. And we all know, we've all spoken to him, and he's a very level-headed kind of boy, and I'm sure he's pretty good in the dressing room. And I see what you're saying. I agree with you, Calum, with the kind of mentality thing, because it does feel like that with the unbeaten run and all that stuff, and maybe people were, including myself, were criticising some of the performances. I think it does feel like they've kind of fostered a good kind of team spirit over the past few months.
Lyndon Dykes might be twice the size of Lee Griffiths, but he's got half the sperm count.
Is this scientific fact?
I can't disclose where I've got that information from.
Okay, that was a bit left field.
Yeah, I have to say, I have sat behind the Griffiths clan at a football match before, and there's a few of them.
Okay. It does tie in with what Sean was saying, to be fair, so.
It does, Do you know the one that excites me a wee bit? Not necessarily in a good way, but just in a sort of potentially catastrophic ways, Grant Hanley.
I was going to say Grant Hanley, yep.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's a good Dumfries boy. Come on, give him a chance.
There hasn't been a Scotland player in the last decade who's given me as many heart attacks as Grant Hanley has.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, I could probably name like five off the top of my head.
Oh, go on then. Like who?
Yeah, you've set yourself up here, man. What have you done?
I mean, O'Donnell straight away. I mean, he's in the squad. I'm looking at him with massive fear and trepidation.
He played really well in the last game.
Some of these guys, mate, like Chris Abolumu. I mean, you're forgetting some of these absolute jobbers that we've
played. These guys are flash in the pan rubbish.
I mean, like consistently, yeah. I'll think about it. Maybe next week as a nice little morale booster before the game, I'll list my top five Scotland Doug Meat bomb scare jobbers.
Do it
for you.
I think Oliver Burke's first touch is definitely up there with a bomb scare.
Yeah, that's a shout. That's a shout. We're trying to be positive here. I was going to bring Kieran into the chat in a positive manner and say we've got Kieran Tierney back, we've got Stuart Armstrong back, and Ryan Christie. That's good news as well.
Well, you're the one that said dog meat. Come on.
It's because it's funny, but anyway.
But that's my fault.
Good squad, Kieran, you reckon?
I think looking at the squad overall, it's a good problem to have for Steve Clark. There's a massive amount of top quality players there, but it's just about trying to find them in the right system, and trying to stick with it. And there's been too much chopping and changing, but I think Griffiths coming back is a great boost for the squad. I think he's somebody in the box that's... He's a predator. I think any wee scraps or any chances, he'll certainly finish them. So I think he'll have a part to play. Whether he starts, I don't know. I don't know if he's sharp enough yet, but it'll be good to see him in and about the game.
He'd bang a free kick in as well.
Yeah. I mean, just on that as well, we talk about like why Shankland in the squad and stuff, but he's proven in the Israel game, if it goes down to penalties and things like that, he's useful. You know, bring him on, you know he's going to be able to talk about a penalty for you. Things like that, but I mean, do you think we can do it, boys? We can finally end 22 years of hurt?
It's going to be tough.
Nah.
I mean, Serbia. What was that?
Nah.
That was nah. Nah. I've seen too much.
Yeah, no, we're used to it, but Serbia obviously have some excellent players. I think, but I do think we're better set up than Norway were to counteract them because we're. We've built our success recently, or I say success, we've not been beaten for a while, but on being strong defensively and keeping teams out. Norway, on the other hand, kind of rely on their really good young attacking players at the moment and just kind of go for teams, and Serbia kind of picked them off. So I think it's not going to be a pretty sight, I don't think. Particularly if Grant Hanley plays. But
Grant Hanley and Andy Considine at the back, that would be great. Yeah.
No, Hanley's just in the squad.
Ah, Kim Boogie.
But Declan Gallagher's been really good, I think, the last month. I thought he looked impressive. Interesting to see what Scott McKenna comes back, how he's been at Nottingham Forest. But I think we're underdogs, but there's no reason. I can't. Apart from the boy Milinkovic-Savic, is very, very good. There's no reason why we can't frustrate them. And as you say, maybe we just play for the 0-0 and go for penalties.
100% record in international football from the spot, Scotland.
That's the Republic of Ireland method, is it not?
What? Just see the game out and try and...
Play for 0-0 and go for penalties,
yeah.
That's it.
In a serious note, though, like... Under Clark, we're sort of playing to our strengths. He got a hard time, Bertie Vokes, but when you look, that was the last time he made a playoff final, 2003 against Holland. 6-1 in the aggregate we lost, given, but you know, it's different, it's a completely different ballgame playing Serbia than it is playing Holland at that time with the players they had. But Bertie Vokes had a lot of maybe unfancy players, guys getting called up from kind of smaller Scottish teams, played to our strengths, got into a decent position to go into a tournament. Didn't happen, didn't work out for him, but there's a chance here I hope we do it, obviously. Of course I do. But I think we've got as good a chance as Serbia going there, no fans. Why not? One in Scotland there.
Are you comparing Steve Clark to Bertie Vokes?
Yeah, why not? and their approach to the media, maybe, I don't know, and understanding what they're saying sometimes, yeah, potentially.
I agree with you 100% on, let's hope they can do it, but with Scotland, I think you do, I just live more in hope than expectation at this point. It's been 20 years or more of unrelenting misery, so if we can end that just now, next week, that would be That would be absolutely brilliant, but I don't expect it.
That's just Scottish society in general, isn't it? Just
yeah,
hope rather than expectation. Let's just...
I think we'll do it. I'm calling it. I think we'll do it. So there's a bit of positivity.
That's too much positivity, Kieran. We can tell you're new here.
You've jinxed it now.
But no, we'll leave it there. Positive note. Come on, Scotland.
Shanklin with a winning penalty.
Thanks for joining us, Kieran.
No, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. It was good fun.
Jordan for a late prediction there. Shanklin to winning penalty. Cheers for that, Gio.
Yeah, I've just jinxed it, haven't I? What have I done?
Again, Sean, Perthy presence. Always welcome.
Thanks.
And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week for some more Twa Teams. Goodbye.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.